see you coming back in here with ducky jumpsies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jumpsies.
How could anybody go and sit in a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
How's it going? Welcome to the Three Man Weave the Balls at the EGA podcast. Mark Friday's here with me. Mark, what's the crack?
Oh, sure. Not a lot.
And making his long-awaited debut, rugby's Noel Reid. I don't know what the comparison is in this scenario. Peter Brown, what's the crack?
Well, as on the rugby podcast, Noel Reid never knows where he's going to play. So this week he has been dropped into a GA podcast, so it's kind of fitting.
That's a real niche reference for anyone who listens to both the Balls Rugby and GA podcast. We've got a cracking show lined up. We're going to hear from Declan Hannan and Rory O'Connor later on. We're going to pick out a few of the underappreciated Gaelic footballers, would be fair to say, Mark. This is all spawned from an idea you had on Twitter.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago we actually mentioned the podcast as well about Marty Riley from Cavan. This is basically the Marty Riley Hall of Fame is what we should brand it. It's not quite underrated, yet not quite underappreciated. It's hard to describe. It's basically players who are perhaps renowned in their own county for being brilliant, but aren't recognised outside of the county. And even sometimes some of them are within their own county aren't as rated as high. They're not the star name on a county team. I think one of the brilliant examples we were given from, I think it was Lauren Gilfoy, was saying David Tuberty from Clare.
Yeah.
As soon as any non-Clare person thinks Clare GA, they think Gary Brennan. Gary Brennan may be underrated in the grand scheme of things. Maybe he could be the best midfielder in Ireland, but he's not underappreciated because everybody knows about Gary Brennan, whereas David Tuberty is a perfect example of someone who's underappreciated and maybe doesn't get the plaudits that he deserves.
Before we get to that, we have to touch off a very important topic, which is the Ball correspondence. Our loyal listeners have got in touch to hit out at some lazy journalism, our own lazy journalism. So last week we talked about the greatest sticks men.
Well, I'm going to stop you there because I kept quiet up until now. Again, last week on the podcast, I brought up the thing about stick men. Then you started calling it sticks men. Then I was in the company of Mick and Morris, our two hurling experts in the office. And I was afraid to say anything. I was like, should it not be stick men? And then it took until Sunday night for PJ Brown to speak up in Slack and say, surely it's stick men, not sticks men.
Probably says too much about how long it took me to actually listen to the podcast.
I
agree. You are right, Mark. It is stick men.
Yeah.
It's the one individual stick man, but as a collective, they are sticks men. It was a group we were talking about. This was a group of sticks men. So that was the whole point of it. So like as a trio, we are fantastic pints men. But you yourself, Mark Farley, are a good pint man.
I presume we're talking about scoring points on the pitch.
Exactly. Yeah.
Drinking there. Yeah. I can see your argument there, but like we would then say that whoever it was, Aaron Galan, is one of the great sticks men. Whereas, like, he's a great stick man. He's a great stick man.
He's amongst the higher echelons of great sticks men. He's not.
I don't know. He is.
When you talk about them as a group, these are a group. The bone of contention isn't the pronunciation of stick men or sticks men, although maybe it will be after listening to this podcast.
Let's put it up on the Instagram. Let's make a poll.
The bone of contention is who we selected. Like, I should be pointed out firstly that this wasn't the definitive list. This was more an idea we had going into the show, and you know, when you're given 5 minutes to pick a group of three, maybe some slip through the cracks. That's inevitable. It's going to happen. But nevertheless, people have gotten in touch with their own suggestions. So Patrick Callaghan, this probably the most popular suggestion that we left out. This one is fair enough. Definitely is Ben O'Connor. Kind of don't know how that slipped our minds, but definitely. So that's a lot of anger about the lazy journalism that led to that. A lot of anger about Podge's inclusion, which is an interesting one, right?
Just on Ben O'Connor, one of the great hexagon helmet players, hexagon helmet men of hurling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of anger about Podge Collins. I think this was my suggestion, I'm pretty sure it was. So my understanding of a great stickman, I think maybe it was slightly different to a lot of people. Like it wasn't necessarily being a fantastic striker of the ball purely. It was his ability to get on the ball or get the ball up into his hand with amazing skill. Kind of, it's the John Troy thing about being able to flick a ball up with, you know, real kind of a level of kind of clarity and just ability to, which would defy logic a lot of the time. And then maybe his own striking ability lets him down after that. But it was that initial kind of skill to his ability with a hurl, as opposed to maybe being a fantastic striker of the ball.
I would have thought that stick being a great stick man would encompass everything.
It's not just the one facet. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Everything that involves you for the hurling.
Other calls, DJ, who we had in it. I don't know what that's about.
As people not reading the article before they comment. You know who you are.
As someone who, like, I'm not culpable in any of this because I wasn't on the podcast last week. It must have been a pretty big crack for Keane Lynch to fall through.
See,
Keane Lynch
spawned the idea spawned with Keane Lynch. So it wasn't necessarily, like, Keane Lynch was the inspiration for the idea. So then it would have been assumed that he was incorporated within the list anyway. It wasn't that we were letting him away with it entirely. Also, we didn't want to necessarily have to talk about, like, we could have had six different Limerick players realistically. We had talked about Hegarty's kind of forearm strike over the head, and then we also brought it up because of Galland's goal. So it wasn't necessarily about that.
What we're saying is Keane Lynch is too good of a stickman to put into the article.
Oh, he's the stickman.
PJ Carroll said Aaron Galland has some hands, some vision, and finds space easily, but Keane Lynch best stickman around. How he gets the ball up in tight situations, unreal. Joe Canning, a serious operator too. Yeah, Joe Canning is a great shout. Jim O'Connor said Joe Cooney Sr. If DJ gets a shout, then so should Cooney, or at very least Kevin Broderick. Sean O'Murkeen said no Tommy Dunn, one of the best hurlers in the last 30 years. And that, so I think Tommy Dunn might be the epitome of what you were talking about, which is the wristy hurler type of thing. Like, he was more so, like, Tommy Dunn put the ball over from, you know, with a 65 without any backswing. It was just this.
Yeah, really, that's a wristy hurler. That's not a stickman. They're two different things. But maybe he's both. Really.
You can be both. Yeah, exactly. You can be both. Vince McElroy said Kevin Broderick for Galway should be on it instead of Hayes. Just look at his point against Kilkenny. On that, I think Hayes, in the actual discussion, we pointed out that he's more a stick man. He's more a wristy hurler than a stick man. It's, again, that's an important clarification to make there, Vince. I think we should eventually come up with a definitive list. Yeah. Us collectively. My favourite genre of balls comment is people who think it's one person who runs balls, and that it's, we are a broad church with many different opinions. Moving on from that.
Wait, what comments were that? What ones just hinted at that?
Not to dwell on the negativity, because we're a positive podcast here, Mark, but a couple of comments about you idiot. It was a discussion between three people. So
who wrote the article though?
The Boz team wrote the article. Oh,
but it wasn't me and it wasn't PJ.
We're going to move on, lads. Roy O'Connor from Wexford. I caught up with him at the Sports Physio Ireland Awards last year. Roy O'Connor is an interesting hurler in that probably before his injury, I think he kind of burst onto the scene, and then all the hype that built up around that slightly dissipated when he was out injured, and then he kind of roared back again. So it's to the earlier stage of this year. Suddenly he looks like, along with maybe Conor McDonald, one of Wexford's most important players.
Yeah, he got a lot of responsibility early on in his Wexford career, being put in
at a very early age. Yeah,
being free taker. He was 18 probably at that time. That can probably weigh heavy on your confidence if, as Wexford had last year, a lot of problems with like free takers. If you're missing frees like at such a young age, I mean, it can really hurt your confidence, I think. And maybe Davey shouldn't have given him that responsibility so early.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, how that dissipates to the rest of your game. Just going back to maybe looking at somebody like Evan O'Carroll last weekend, when clearly him missing his frees really affected the rest of his game and, I suppose, young confidence. Like, another young player in a very similar situation, actually, that probably, this is going back to what you talked about with Cavan as well, Mark, that maybe the free-taking role should just lie with one player, because by spreading it out and a couple missing, it affects multiple people's confidence.
Exactly, yeah. And it's also, it's a double-edged sword, because there is the thing that if you are a free taker and you're building yourself into a county panel, that sometimes the frees are good to sit back on. You're like, right, I can get my frees, get my confidence up, and then build into a game from there. So when that goes wrong, it's probably a complete disaster then.
We already have one part of this interview up with Roy O'Connor on site, which you can read. But in another area, which I thought was really interesting, he spoke about Dave Fitzgerald, who obviously has had his ban overturned for the opening game of the Leinster Championship against Dublin, which will be a cracker, especially the way Dublin have improved lately. But that means that he can come down onto the sideline, so do this thing that he's done a lot lately, which is start up in the stand and then gravitate down towards the second half. And one thing that Rory was really interested in is exactly what happens there, like what is the process, and also what the benefit of Davey being there is for them team, which we can hear about now.
Yeah, massive. I didn't even see it in the papers or anything, or I don't know if it wasn't, but Yeah, massive for us. He's been at the moment. He's been in the, up in the box or up in the stand for maybe the first half, kind of seeing how the game is going, and then comes down the second half and kind of lifts us or makes the right calls, if you know what I mean, to drive us over the line. Yeah, so I was up in the Premier League in Croke Park on Sunday, and you know, you can actually see, I can see what Limerick were doing with their puckouts. You can see what Waterford were trying to do with their puckouts. You just see everything that's going on. You're in a calm spot up there as well. You're not going to make any kind of rash decisions from emotion on the sideline too. So, I think he's managed it very well, and he's getting us over the line in a few of the league games too. You know, he's great to have on the sideline because he's going to fight your corner, you know, till the death. And as long as we kind of stay, you know, focused and not get distracted, it's a bonus for us.
That reminded me of the GAA coaching conference when Derek McGrath talked about. Derek McGrath, for those who don't know, spoke at the GAA coaching conference. It's up on YouTube. You can watch this whole thing. It's about a 30-minute seminar. But part of that was him speaking about the idea of body language and what a coach's body language does to kind of his team. So he put up a screenshot of him the day they got hammered by Cork in the Munster Championship. And head down, his arms folded, sitting on the sideline, looking very glum. And what he feels that did to his team in terms of sending a message. And I thought it was really interesting to see on the flip side of that, Wexford players are clearly, you know, is there anybody more animated on the sideline than Davey? And that's something that they can clearly feed off, because maybe they, I don't know if it's a level of energy, but just going back to that body language idea, that what, you know, your sideline conduct really matters.
It can be like a double-edged sword, I think, because sometimes you would like to see a level of calmness from your manager, because that is required on the pitch as well. You don't want to panic. And if you see Davey going nuts on the sideline, maybe in some situations where you should be kind of not so calmer than he actually is,
So that's an interesting point. You think Davey should time his tantrums so that it kind of comes with the.
I don't think Davey can time his tantrums. I don't think that's in his locker yet. Maybe it will be sometime in the future that he can just they will just explode when necessary. But no, I don't think Davey can. He can manage it.
I like the idea as well of Davey Fitzgerald, especially a renowned man who sits down and does the sort of, I wouldn't be surprised if he does vision boards, but you know that he kind of sits down and visualises how the game's going to go. He probably is big into goal setting and all that, that one of his goals at the start of the year. So what are you going to improve on this year, Davey? Well, I'm going to try and time my tantrums a bit better. But it's one of those weird things as well where I can't see any nearly argument that a manager should be down on the sideline. You see, if you're going to the game as a spectator, you'd obviously see the kind of the hill or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it fills up at the top first because you've got a better view than if you're right down on pitch side. But then I think about it, and then I'm like, John Kiely had one of the, he was one of Limerick's standout performers against Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final last year, because he seemed to pull them back into the game himself. He was revving everything up, every score they got. So it is that kind of thing, like you were saying, PJ.
His fist bumps, yeah, that's a great point, yeah. I think there's probably, just going back to what Rory said there as well, there's probably a nice marriage between the two. Every team now has somebody sitting up in the stands, really. I mean, all the top level teams, Kerry have Donny Buckley doing it, Donegal, Stephen Rochford, we spoke about that on the show last week, and that obviously is hugely important in terms of your tactical setup and how you adjust to a game, and even just, you know, keep puck out patterns or whatever that may be. But simultaneously, you probably need that presence on the sideline to give you a lift, and I guess Davey's probably trying to marry them both now.
It is quite interesting what Rory O'Connor said there, that when Davey is up in the stand, he can't make any rash decisions. I know, is this in the mind of the Wexford player themselves?
I remember when Davey first got his ban, he actually spoke about that he found it was a lot more beneficial for his own sake to be up there. But then again, I guess if your players get such a lift that when you do kind of come down, that maybe he's got a nice balance now.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit unfair to suggest that Davey, there is nothing more coming from him on the sideline other than tantrums. Because he does, if you've ever been around him, you've ever interviewed him, kind of sat around, there is an incredible energy coming off.
Yeah,
him.
That's fair enough.
I mean, he does offer the players, they seem they get a real belief from them. I sat in front of him and for 5 minutes, and at the end of it, you think, maybe Wexford could win the All-Ireland.
I could be on the team. I can't do it.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media.
Roy O'Connor probably isn't underappreciated, or certainly not within Wexford. No, I don't think he is nationally either. But there is a genre of Gaelic footballer who is, and we're going to run through them. So we put this out initially, a kind of a plea. I think first thing we need to do is kind of define the criteria of what we're looking for here. So it's when we say underappreciated, I think underappreciated and underrated are two very different things. So underappreciated is a player who has been doing it at a level for a consistent number of years and yet still doesn't claim the limelight that maybe his fellow teammates do. So say for when this first came up, the first example that came into my head was somebody like Mark Jackson, the Offaly goalkeeper, who we all remember last year kicked 7 points in the opening game against Wexford and saved the penalty. But that was his debut. I imagine, you know, within the next 6 years, we'll all know who Jackson is, and that won't be a question anymore. So he's just, right now he's unheralded, but it's coming. It's players who have been doing it, but their own teammate kind of takes more of the limelight, so they float under the radar.
Speaking of goalkeepers in Leinster Championship in the early rounds last year, was Graham Rody was another, which is, he's obviously in the headlines this week.
Yeah.
But he's another one who has actually become probably Leash's best known player. So he quickly went from being underrated and underappreciated to being probably perfectly rated. Although I would say now he's back, maybe back to being underrated again, given the negative reaction that he had to last week's goal towards the end of the Westmeath match, which I don't think, and people are saying, you know, he's getting his just desserts and all that from venturing out the field. I knew he missed it. He went out the field when Leash were a point down, got caught out. Westmeath got a goal to kind of win the game. But like, you look at that replay, Graham Brody could have been in goals for that, and it still probably would have been a goal.
You wouldn't have saved it, yeah. Mm. And the system itself didn't malfunction. I mean, the system is that he comes out. This happened against Carlo last year in Croke Park. He comes out, he loses the ball, and all it is one player drops back into goals, and the rest of it carries on as normal. So the system didn't malfunction. It was just a brilliant finish. I actually think Westmeath, probably the sight of a goalkeeper come out might have invigorated them to move the ball slightly quicker, and that might have led to a goal. But in terms of, like, I think Sucker said it best after the game, that, you know, he's here a year and a half. It's malfunctioned twice. The rest of the time, it's a massive advantage to them. It's probably not something that they should or will deviate away from.
I was
really really happy to hear Shukru say that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
That, you know, that he's not going to stop Graham Brody doing this, because it is really exciting to see. It's this kind of tactical innovation that we don't see very often in GAA. And because you get the second mistake ever out of, how many times, 100, 200 times? I don't know how many times he's actually come out of goal and you've had two mistakes. And that Chukru is kind of still going to kind of persist with this. He obviously sees that there is more benefit to this than kind of negatives. And, you know, when you hear lads like Bernard Flynn kind of saying, here, you're like, you got what you deserved kind of here pretty much. Like, that kind of makes me really angry. They're like, how are you not excited about this, to see this happening in GAA?
But doesn't it also go to prove the point about, you know, if you were a coach, the idea of maybe taking a risk, like this, a level of kind of begrudgery, just hoping it goes wrong for the sake of, because you deviate away from the norm, just for purely for no other reasons. Like, the kind of balls it takes for a coach to actually try that is a lot more. Everyone actually saying, oh, why aren't we all playing like Graham Brody? And it's like, well, if it goes wrong, you get pillarised for it, probably wrongly pillarised for it.
It was interesting last year, I think around the time that before the Leinster Championship, I asked John Shukru about whether this is something he had introduced, but he said Graham Brody kind of came.
It was his own idea.
It was his own idea. It must be tough to be like a Leash substitute keeper, and all of a sudden there's something totally different expected of you here. Like, you know, it's no longer you are. It was like, okay, for like years ago, it was like, I have to save the ball. Now I have to do more than drive it up the middle. You know, I've got to find lads with short kicks. But now I've got to be able to solo the ball up and past my own 45, break past defenders. You know, it's...
It's becoming one of the busiest positions on the field. Yeah. Two last points on this. One, I do think there is a benefit. While Graham Brody shouldn't be, not pillarised, whatever, but there are a lot of club goalkeepers now starting to try this, and some of these club teams don't have the systems you're talking about, Morris. So there is definitely going to be a lot of teething problems. I can see it already happening in club matches with goalkeepers coming out and losing the ball and easy goals being scored. Secondly, it's great to have you on the podcast this week, Peter, to clear it up. Talking with Leash manager there, John, I've been pronouncing it John Sugru all my life. You said John Sukru. Peter, how is it pronounced?
John Shukru.
Shukru.
Because,
there we go.
Yeah, I did point out, I'm pretty sure I've pointed this out to you before, but, you know.
Although I haven't mentioned his name since.
Okay.
That was since he pointed out the last time a couple of weeks ago. But anyway, underappreciated players.
Well, one more point on to anyone who says that Graham Brody cost Leash that game. Leash kicked 16 wides. That's why they lost the game.
Graham Brody probably isn't underappreciated, but I think somebody like Gareth Dillon is, because every time in this Leash team, it's, it's Tony Kingston or it's Graham Brody who assume the limelight. And yet, there probably isn't a better man marker in GAA, realistically. He's one of the best in terms of taking people out of the game. He's also brilliant when he plays. He can play as a half forward as well, and he does that as well. And he also is amazingly consistent. He's done it for years. So I think if he is the classic example of this genre.
Definitely. Another one that was suggested on Instagram by Queevy McFlynn was Stephen Attride from Leeds as well.
The other cornerback.
Yeah, exactly. But I think Garrett Dillon was, even just on last year alone, was possibly the best player Leeds had behind Graham Brody. So he definitely is one that warrants to be high up on this list. What are we going? We're going to go with a, maybe we'll put, we'll mention the nominees here and then we'll put together a list on site later on, so who can make the cut. We can't have everybody, but we can go through a few of them here.
Candidates, yeah. So just to go back to, you mentioned Instagram there, a couple of other suggestions we've had in. Jamie Malone, which is a great one. Westmeath's Jerry Regan, who probably is slightly more recent because of the, maybe the limelight he commanded at the weekend, but he's doing that consistently and probably not getting the credit that he deserves. Donegal's Hugh McFadden. Mark, you seem to really sympathise with that point of view.
Yeah, but I've my eye's been taken by another Donegal player. I was like trying to think of some of these big teams. It's very hard, like a Dublin team, it's very hard to pick out someone who's underappreciated because everybody's an all-star at this stage. They've all got multiple all-stars. We were saying, meeting earlier on, maybe Michael Fitzsimons or John Small, but again, they're household names. But one that stuck out for me from Donegal is Paddy McGrath. He's been on the Donegal team for 10 years now. He's won an All-Ireland. He's one of the only players, like, if you look at the likes of, okay, you've got Michael Murphy there, but there are a lot of players that are starting to wean on that Donegal team for that All-Ireland team. There aren't that many left.
Yeah.
You've seen Lacey's gone, Frank McGlynn's playing more as a sub these days. Paddy McGrath's been an ever-present cornerback, and he rarely gets mentioned in any conversation around the best cornerbacks in Ireland.
And yeah, like, no, I wonder, does he merit it? Even if you look at that Donegal team, maybe... I don't think he offers the same kind of level of... I think he might be perfectly appreciated to his own level, do you know? You'd find very few players who would argue that he's a bad player or anything close to it, to be honest. And but I also don't know if he's, you know, this revolutionary corner forward who, you know, is going to totally take somebody out of the game or totally drive the way Owen Van Gallagher does going forward. I wonder, is he... you know, a happy medium in that there doesn't have to be a, you know, like, I think there's three levels. You can be genuinely underappreciated, you can be perfectly appreciated, or you can be overappreciated because everybody's, it's the thing about
it's
being...
It's the Andy Mallon card.
So like, underrated, so that you become overrated. You're constantly hurt. Like for anybody who doesn't watch any Premier League football, you'd think that James Milner is a Ballon d'Or contender every single year because of the amount of times you're told that he's so underrated, to the extent where he probably comes slightly overrated. Yeah. The same thing probably happened for Dominic Walsh in Kerry, who for years was genuinely underrated, and then so many people pointed out that he was underrated that he kind of became a bit overrated, and now he's probably on a happy medium again.
Now he's retired. Now he's retired, he's settled back down to the level where he should be.
There's been a few suggestions, and I'm going to leave this one up to you, Morris. We've had a few Galway people suggested. Now, we can't put all Galway lads into this, but there are three here I'm going to let you pick between. Johnny Heaney, that was suggested by Jim Crowley, and then also Killian McDade, and Michael Daly has got a number of nominations on Instagram.
Yeah, and I mean, this is going back to our initial criteria, just to clearly define this. These are players who've been doing it for a number of years, but because of another star, don't get the credit that they deserve. And I think all three of them will eventually get the credit they deserve. Like, they all three came through a phenomenal under-21 team. So Johnny, like, Galway have a breed of players like Johnny Heaney, like McDade, like Eamon Brannigan, like Peter Cook, who all came through that really successful under-21 team and have kicked on since then. So eventually, I think they all have the ability and probably will become household names. It's just that they're a tad young right now. I don't know if they're under... They're underrated. They're not underappreciated because everyone in Galway is painfully aware of the ability they have.
But the point is that it's outside of the county.
To take Killian McDade, for example. Killian McDade was a brilliant under 21, went away to Australia for a year, is now back, hasn't really played senior football before. So has anybody the chance to appreciate him? Daly was basically a year out injured with a really horrible knee injury. He's back again. Johnny Heaney is probably the closest to the thing in terms of probably the last definitely 3 years or certainly 2 years. He's been doing it at a consistent enough level. But I would see that kind of tide turning and eventually he'll become as well-known as like a Sice or an Armstrong eventually. So I think they're, you know, there's a lot of young, this is like the Graham Brody thing, kind of young, exciting players who have shown a huge amount of potential and will eventually grow to fulfil that, but maybe not right now aren't in that bracket.
I think Heaney's around long enough to be...
He meets the criteria.
I wouldn't say Daly. I'd definitely not kill him. I wouldn't fit it. But I think Heaney is one of those players that people outside the county know Johnny Heaney exists. They know he's very good, but they're not quite sure if he's a forward or a back or what his story is.
That's because he can play as both as well, by the way.
I think Kieran Malloy is also in this group. I think being named the club player of the year at the weekend, probably he's now appreciated.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's going to be hugely appreciated at inter-county level. He's going to be a superstar, I think.
Yeah.
His engine is incredible. Like, yeah.
Oh, he does,
he gets
stop,
up
yeah.
and down the pitch so well.
You can't forget Kieran Malloy as well once you see him. Like, yeah. Because of the hairdo, he's not one of those players who just blends into the background.
And is there an argument that people with hair that stands out, they end up being overrated? Because you notice them on the pitch.
Yeah.
I do remember reading, I think it was a study that showed that blonde players are in football, in the soccer, I mean, are highly more appreciated because it's just easier to spot them.
That's a good point. Another guy, actually, that brings it on to another county, who Killian O'Sullivan,
from
I would
me,
say,
I was just
is
thinking that, yeah.
very good player. But I would say he is aptly rated.
Yeah.
Mostly probably because of his hairdo. He actually probably was, he stood out before he actually got up to the level that he's actually at now. Whereas someone like Donal Keoghan has been around that main team for a good few years now and hasn't the same level of appreciation from other counties.
I think he is the number one example for me because he's a player who, if anybody had seen his league performances, this is another problem that these games, maybe he's performing games that aren't necessarily on television, but if you'd seen his league performances, you'd put him in the top 10 players in the country, I think, certainly based off this year, and he's been doing that at a consistent enough level that he would maintain that. But because he's not the Mickey Newman, for example, in the league final, because the plaudits he'll get for, you know, he's scoring not five and monstering people, probably deservedly, but because of that, there's players who fall away from that bracket. So he's the perfect example for me.
Yeah, definitely. Is there any others catching your eye, PJ, or any other suggestions you've had?
Is Ryan Wiley underrated or is he perfectly rated?
This was a hard one. I saw that one suggested. I think he's perfectly rated. I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago. We picked a 15 from outside Dublin, best 15 in Ireland, or best 15 to beat Dublin. And we had Ryan Wiley in it.
Yeah.
And even now I'm thinking, like, I don't know, should Ryan Wiley be in it? Like, I think the fact that Drew was there as well, that you sort of automatically pull him in as always one of the Wileys. Whereas if you look at the likes of a Colin Walsh, even though he's been captain of Monaghan and has had All-Stars, he's probably still not that famous outside of Monaghan. Or Dermot Malone has been around that Monaghan team for what seems to be about 20 years at this stage. And he has been, like, he's gone through that, the whole rise of Monaghan, and is still around and is still a very important player to them. Another one is Vinnie Corrie. Vinnie Corrie would have been seen back, you know, years ago, you think, oh, Vinnie Corrie is the last of a dying breed, a real just rock hard centre back, no frills, the likes, you know, similar to your Francie Bellew, Kier McGeaney type defenders. Whereas he has completely developed with that Monaghan team. He's even played at full forward for a while. He's adapted to that running game that they brought in. So, like, even though he's kind of well known, I think he might actually be underappreciated for
the. He's the Michael Brick Walsh of that team, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll just fit in wherever I need to fit in, like, yeah.
Definitely, and he never would. But Darren Malone is another, like, one, just go back to him briefly, is you were saying last week, or sorry, before the podcast, that he's like his position is a permanent dummy team player because he's never named in a team to start, but always does.
Dummy all-star, I think, would be the term I used, yeah.
So within this underappreciated players, we've had players who might not be, will eventually be appreciated or just too young. We also have players who don't command the limelight because they've got a star forward or somebody else who does, and so they're therefore they float under the radar. But then there's a third bracket, which is the players who are genuinely star forwards or star quality, but just are victims of circumstance and that their games are never on television or they come from lower tier counties. So somebody like that for me is Adrian Marmon from Sligo, who routinely hits 1-6 in the open round of the Connacht Championship for Sligo. But then Sligo get knocked out or they get two games and nobody gets to see him after that. I think David Toberty might be slightly in similar bracket like that, in that he falls into both, in that he's consistently scoring or able to hit high scores but doesn't get enough exposure. And then the one player who does command it is because Gary Brennan is this powerhouse in midfield. So he kind of commands whatever little attention that is given to them and he flows under that radar again.
Another one is in Fermanagh. We've had a few suggestions from Fermanagh. we've got Ronan Collins suggests Owen Donnelly. And then the other two that stood out for me, just like that I was thinking of, was Conal Jones and Ryan Jones. And it's hard for me to even pick between the two of them. I'm going to go with Ryan, just because he won the Derry Gonley Player of the Year last year. But like Ryan Jones and Donnelly. Donnelly was the one who sent in, or sorry, Donnelly was the one who got the goal last year against Monaghan with the flick at the very end. And Ryan Jones was the one who sent the ball in. So like, again, the Quigleys are always brought up with Fermanagh. Yeah. Shea Cullen is another example of someone who probably is aptly rated this stage. He got an All-Star nomination out of it last year and all that. But the Joneses have been great at club and county level for the last couple of years.
Oh, I didn't think we were incorporating club into this.
Well, I was just, I incorporated club into it just because I was trying to pick between the two brothers. I don't know which one to go with. Another one, when you mentioned like teams that aren't on television all the time, Brian Fox from Tipperary.
Yeah.
Might be Tipperary's best player. But like, he's been around playing for Tipperary for 10 years. He was there in the bad times. He's been there in the good times. And now there in the slightly not so good times, but not quite bad times. And he's been an ever present. So I think he definitely warrants a mention.
We're going to put up a, not a definitive list, but a list of candidates for any listener to abuse. You can direct that towards Mark Farley, which, or Mark at balls.ie.
Why am I the one taking responsibility for this one?
And, well, you...
Well, what your idea?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you chickened out a stick man last week, and Paul teamed it.
And then Ara,
that was also my idea, to be fair, as well.
that article was a genuine Paul's team, because I started it and then was at the end of my was at the end of my shift, so somebody else finished it.
Right.
And then he chickened out and Paul's teamed it. Declan Hannan, PJ.
Yeah. Was at Crow Park today for the launch of the Kellogg Cool Camps, and spoke to Declan Hannan in good form. Happy to be an All-Ireland winner, of course, who wouldn't be? So he's asked here, in the audio here, about the backroom team that John Kiley has put together.
Yeah, like John is an excellent manager and excellent, you know, he's very good people, skills like, and everything like that. So he's put in an unreal structure there. There's so many people involved in the backroom team that it's frightening, like trying to name them out. You'll be under a bit of pressure to remember them all, you know. Like in terms of stats and video analysis teams and everything like that, and look, it's probably, I presume it's the same in every county team, but that's just the way it's gone over the past number of years, and John has assembled a really good bunch of guys.
A lot of fun being a Limerick hurler at the moment.
It is, it's good crack. I suppose the boys are, a lot of them are so young and free spirited, and they just you know, they enjoy the crack off the field and the restaurants and everything like that. But it's great, it's a fun place to be. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a favourite memory from the winter, from being All-Ireland champions?
Sure, as low as I suppose for myself, it was going back to there to the home coming in on the Tuesday night. It was unreal. It was on in my old primary school out in the pitch out front, and there was thousands upon thousands there, so yeah, something you'll never forget. But again, like, you have to move on, and it'd be great if we could do it again in 2019, but it's a long way away at the moment.
Do you think they've, as a group, handled being All-Ireland champions really well? It hasn't gone to anyone's head. How do you, where did you get that kind of maturity from at such a young age, that the squad is,
yeah,
young?
Look, the boys are all very well educated. They've all gone to college. They're all very, very down to earth lads as well. You know, they're happiest, I suppose, when they're on the training field and playing matches, and they know that if anything went to their head, they'd be knocked down straight away. And you know, look, you could get carried away if you wanted, but you won't be starting, because you'll be focused on different things. And you know, that's the way it is. That's just the competitiveness that's in the panel at the minute. It's great.
Jesus, they're a more likable bunch right now. They've managed to hold on to, you know, this, the underdog tag that Mayo currently have, where they appeal to the neutral. Limerick have managed to hold on to that despite the fact that they're winning all around them. they've just done a double, and they're still kind of, aren't they a great bunch of lads? That sentiment still very much remains.
There's a few things to like here, in that they are really enjoying being All-Ireland champions. They gave everything in the league, and you get a real sense that they're not going to settle for one All-Ireland and we're done. We're going to, like, they're going to try and create a dynasty here, I guess, yeah?
Yeah, it'll be interesting as well that Caroline Curra had a big influence, we're talking about her after the All-Ireland final last year, the sports psychologist that was working with them. She's gone this year in terms of the backroom staff that Declan's been talking about. So I wonder what they're going to do this year. Are they getting somebody else in?
They already have a good Galway man.
They brought in Tony O'Regan, former Galway hurler. So he's, well, from what they've said so far, they seem to, he's been in a good bit around the panel, and that he's exerting an influence. He hasn't, I get the feeling he hasn't been around a whole lot yet, but come championship, they'll be utilising him. It was interesting to hear like Declan Hannan talking about what they learned and what from having Caroline Corrigan last year. One of the things was being able to shut out outside influences, that like things like the media, people like around a village or town kind of like asking you what's going on, what's going wrong with the team, that once you shut out those things and make it just about yourselves, it can really help improve your game. And that would seem to be one of the main things that they cited that she's helped them do.
Yeah, definitely. There's interest, and actually you did an interview this week with Róisín McGettigan, the athlete. She represented Ireland in the steeplechase at the Beijing Olympics and won bronze in the 1500 metres at the European Indoor.
It's almost like you're reading the article out here, Mark.
It is. I just said, but like, it's a really interesting interview her talking about she's now a sports psychology coach, and she was identifying the things that hold athletes back and how they treat competition. So like, you can see the effect. They know that it's a new generation of players. They're not shying away from the impact that can have. And it's one of those things, like the Graham Brody thing earlier on, we were talking about people starting to accept, you know, like people who can kind of get on board with these kind of changes and trends are the ones who will excel, with the naysayers are just waiting for someone to get caught out.
Well, like Declan Hanlon is, I think, 26, but he took some little bit of convincing himself, he said, to come around to believing that this could actually help him. And I think Carolyn Currid kind of converted him to that, yeah.
I think Tony O'Regan is a really interesting one, right? Because Tony Og was obviously a phenomenal hurler, but then his job is literally performance coaching. So he has done sports psychology masters, and also he did a performance course too, and has since worked with the Galway footballers. I think he's done some work in Limerick with Adair, I think in the Limerick Club Championship too. And that was one of the things that Aaron Galland said that time when we spoke to him about Tony Og. He said that one of the things that really helps is that not only is he like performance coach and can offer all of those expertise, but he's been there, so he's can speak from both experience and also expertise. It's probably a marriage that I don't think there's anybody in a role like that has had before.
It probably helps when you are a performance psychology coach to have been there, in terms of getting people to actually believe what you're saying.
Yeah,
they do think, okay, he's been here, he's been at this level, so maybe they're probably more willing to accept the kind of theories and concepts that they're kind of trying to put forward and get these players to believe in.
You're probably seeing that a lot more now as well, because you've got like people like that, like Róisín, Jessica Barr is another Irish hurdler who's now doing sports psychology. You've got I don't know if he has an actual qualification in it, but like Oisín McConville or someone like that as well, that has, you know, these lads that are going to different sports as well. They've got experience as a sports coach, but they're also unbelievable at motivating players and talking to players about the, you know, finding out what drives them and understanding that, and then sort of, what's the word, capitalizing on it.
And I think that's probably what the one element that a coaching ticket needs now, is you kind of those different, like there's no longer would you expect a coach to be able to provide all these different components that you need. So you bring in, like the example, just what we talked about last week in the podcast, if you look at the Kerry footballers, like they bring in a defensive expert in Tommy Griffin and then a tackling expert in Donny Buckley and somebody to look after attack like Miles Fitzgerald, and you probably try and get a marriage of them all, which will ultimately lead to Limerick going on and winning to All-Ireland and still remaining as likeable as they do.
I think what makes particularly good GA coaches at the moment in football and hurling is someone who's a delegator, and that they realise their weaknesses, and I can bring in this person or this person. So, I mean, like, even Declan Bonner, it seems already like he has transitioned to being a delegator, because he brought in Stephen Rochford. He's got Carl Lacey in there as a defence coach.
Yeah.
And yeah, people are more willing to accept GAA coaches that I can't do everything.
One of the prime examples of those as well is Terry Hyland, who has now had, I think he's been promoted from Division 3, Division 4, Division 3 and Division 2 of the league. He's had an unbelievable record with Cavan and Fermanagh, and he is a prime candidate of that, of getting people around him who are, you know, he had, like we talked about Gary Rogers being converting Ray Galligan into a goalkeeper. People like these who are experts in their own field, and just building a reputation as a manager like that.
We're out of time, lads. Before we go, we'd ask you to rate and review the podcast. You should also subscribe to the
7 out of 10.
You can also let us know who is the underappreciated podcast member from this podcast, who is perfectly appreciated and who is slightly overappreciated. Any viewpoints from this show, you can get in touch with us at Twitter, Facebook or Instagram at Boz.ie, or even at the gaffer at Boz.ie. We'll be back next week to chat some more nonsense, but in the meantime, take it easy.